Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, picture this. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and a man named William lies awake in Barcelona, Spain, unable to sleep. Now, William's a family man, but he's also a notorious thug. He's caught up in organized crime and his double life is weighing him down with guilt. Opening up a beer, William begins to search for answers, and the first thing he does is open up his computer, calls up Google, and Googles the word church, and he finds a church service being broadcast live from the US. He listens to the worship, joins the chat room afterwards, and starts an online conversation about faith that ends up changing his life forever. That is actually a true story. William is now a Christian and a radically changed man, and the internet church he encountered was part of lifechurch.tv. They're based in Oklahoma, and they're pioneering the way that churches are using technology. These guys are using satellite, Facebook, iPhones, virtual reality worlds, the whole lot, to spread the message of Christ. Bobby Gruenwald is the man who oversees this high-tech wizardry. He's actually called the church's, quote, innovation leader. What a wonderful job description. G'day, Bobby. Welcome to Open House.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I was joking with a friend during the week, you know, even 5 years ago, how many people would have thought that churches would be employing innovation leaders?
Yeah, I don't think that we thought about that 5 years ago either.
Is that right? Yeah, well, let's talk about the journey you've had with LifeChurch.tv. So you started off in Oklahoma in 1996, and it was just a regular church, a small group of people meeting in a rented dance studio, I understand. And today you're what, 20,000 odd people across six states. How did it grow?
Well, it's been really something pretty remarkable to watch. But as the church started, it actually grew fairly quickly early on. We had a very different way of doing church, and we really focused on trying to make church a place where it would connect with people who didn't know Christ and weren't familiar with church.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried to create environments that would be comfortable, but yet still confront people with the truth of the gospel. And so that's how the church started. And then as it came, there's several of us that were drawn to it. My background's actually in business. I had a couple of technology companies in the 90s that I started and sold the last one in 1999. And through that process, I got connected to the church and came to a point where I realized that the passion that I had for what God was doing in the church exceeded the passion I had for business. And so I, like several others, actually made a transition from being in the business world to actually saying maybe the gifts and talents and things that God's given me for business could actually be used to help benefit the church. So along that same time, we began to take those resources and talents from people that were coming to be part of the church and begin to apply them in doing things in some relatively innovative ways at that time, some new ways of doing church.
This is much more than just, you know, using PowerPoint in a church service or playing a video clip or something. The church grows, obviously, numerically in that Oklahoma setting, but then other churches, kind of other campuses are kind of either planted or then incorporated into Life Church. And so you start using satellite technology?
That's actually right. Yeah, we realized really almost accidentally out of necessity that video teaching would actually work as far as a message, as far as conveying a message. It happened actually one evening because our senior pastor's wife had their third child, and it happened in between a Saturday night and a Sunday morning. And we actually had services on Saturday night and on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And so he had taught on Saturday night, and we had captured that on video just because we recorded all the different messages, and we didn't know what we were going to do on Sunday morning. We decided we'd just simply play the video from the night before because he needed to be with his wife and his family that morning. And so we tried that, and what was remarkable is that it really wasn't remarkable, meaning that pretty much the same thing that we had experienced when he's teaching in person seemed to occur when he taught on video. I mean, the same number of people responded. Several people actually didn't even know that he wasn't there.
How does that work?
Well, I think people just become so familiar with looking at the screen. If they're sitting in church and it's being magnified on the screen, that they really don't realize that that's really sort of the best view or the best place to connect visually in the room. So anyway, when we saw the response to that, we realized that there's an opportunity for us to extend the church outside of just that one physical location and begin to expand into other locations and other cities even, and use the commonality between those locations. It'll be the same teaching but delivered via video. And so as we went from one to two to three locations, we were shuffling around DVDs and videotapes initially, but then we realized that satellite technology would be a better use, because the vision of where God was leading us was going to be several more locations. So then we moved to live broadcast of the message via satellite to the different locations.
Bobby Gruenwald is the innovation leader of LifeChurch.tv. Started in 1996 with a handful of people, 21,000 odd people across six US states are now part of the church, including an online church, which I want to talk about in just a second. We're talking about this use of technology for today's church. 1-300-40-20-20 is my number if you've got something to throw into the conversation. Bobby, paint a picture for me today as to what happens with these various campuses across these six US states. Obviously, I guess the Oklahoma church is the main platform, and then your senior pastor, Craig Rochelle, preaches from there. It's then videoed from there to the various locations, right? Is anything else videoed?
Actually, no, nothing else is videoed typically, although things often change. What we do currently is, if you went to any of our locations, you would see a staff, a team of people that are local, that are dedicated to being pastor and being a staff for that location. You would experience worship or music that would be local at each location, so there'd be a band and worship leader, music leader each location. So all that would happen just very, very similarly to what you'd experience at any church. And then when it came time for the teaching, all of the campuses would basically, at the exact same moment, go to a live satellite feed for the teaching segment. Mm-hmm. And so then it would, at the very end, be handed back off to the local team, and that local campus pastor would close out the service at each location. And so what you would experience is very similar to what you'd experience at church anywhere else. The only difference is that the actual teaching portion of it is delivered live via video.
So in 2006, you then take another step forward and you launch this internet campus. To what degree has that grown now?
It's actually grown tremendously over the last few years. It started really because some of my experience in the past with technology and dot-com companies, and watching as community formed around, at that time it was sports content that I was actually involved mm-hmm. with, and I was able to see how passionate people could be about the content, but more importantly, how connected they were to each other in those communities. And so I thought, this is definitely something that the church ought to be looking at using. So it's 2006, we begin Church Online. We at that time called it our internet campus, and have since changed the name to Church Online because that title seemed to make more sense to people that weren't familiar with church. Mm. And it's grown from just a few hundred people initially to where we'll see anywhere between 40 and 50,000 unique computers connect to it each week.
Yeah.
And it's really tremendous to see how that's grown over time. We actually have a total of, I don't even know the recent count, I believe it's 24 different services a week that are live services. And we have volunteers that facilitate those. We have volunteers in South Africa and London, the Faroe Islands and Australia, Canada, the U.S., that actually help facilitate or run these services. And so they're happening at all hours of the day, not just simply times that are specific to the U.S.
So these are actually live services. They're not just somebody sitting down clicking play on a pre-recorded service. These are live services that people are logging into around the world.
It's actually sort of a combination. Without being too technical, a lot of the video content that people experience is actually pre-recorded mm-hmm. or it's recorded that weekend. But there's a chat that's translated live into 45 different languages. There's a live prayer environment. There are people that make it into a live event. And so some of the content is pre-recorded, but there's a live experience surrounding that content. Mm-hmm. And so when people come in, they're experiencing things at the exact same moment, exact same time. and they're able to interact and talk with others from all around the world. In fact, there's people from over 140 countries every week that participate in our services.
That's amazing. Okay, so that's led to some pretty innovative use of other social networking technologies. You've incorporated Facebook and things like that. What's been your most successful, I guess, application when it comes to taking the church online concept even further?
You know, we have several different kind of outlets for church online and different ways that people connect with it. A couple that I'll mention that are notable, and I'll try to describe what I think has been the most successful, but one that's notable is we have a church online experience in Second Life, which is a 3D sort of virtual world environment. Mm. And so there's people that they have avatars. It almost, if you're to see it, if you're not familiar with it, it looks similar to a video game. And they have sort of these characters that you can pick and choose, and you can actually interact in what we resemble one of our physical locations. So you kind of walk in and experience this three-dimensional space that you'd sit in a seat and next to others and watch the church experience and engage that way. We also have the ability for people to experience these services via their iPhone through a live streaming video environment. So we have people that are watching it while they're on the road or traveling. And I think one of the things that we've done that we've connected with church online is we really felt like it was important for Christians to be engaged in the Bible and for there to be community around the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so we created a tool called YouVersion.com. It's YouVersion.com. And it's really a tool that allows this Web 2.0 generation to take the media, the YouTube videos, the Flickr photos, the content that they're creating and sharing and uploading online, and allow them to associate any of that web media with any verse or series of verses in the Bible so that they can help people that maybe aren't Bible readers or maybe unfamiliar with the Bible to understand how it might connect to our everyday lives. So it kind of becomes a way for people to express and share how the Bible is an important part of their life. And then from that website, we extended it to an iPhone application, BlackBerry application, Google Android phone application, several different mobile apps that allow people to have a free Bible on their mobile phone. And we've really seen that resonate with people to where we have over 2 million people that have that installed on their mobile phone. Yeah. And so I can kind of go on and on, but there's really sort of several things that have kind of spun out of our use of the web technology in particular and trying to connect with people in community.
This is Open House right across the nation. Bobby Gruenwald is the innovation leader of LifeChurch.tv, based in Oklahoma. Started as a little church of a few people meeting together in a rented dance studio. They've then spread across 6 US states with actual physical locations. They now have 40,000 to 50,000 unique computers logging onto one of their 24 or something odd online services and 2 million odd people downloading their special unique online Bible. Really quite amazing stuff. Theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast of our chat if you want to pass it on to somebody else. Let's talk about the pros and cons of this whole idea of digital church, Bobby. I'm sure you've reflected on both the pros and the cons. I mean, the pros first, the advantages of just what you're doing. How would you describe the kinds of people you're reaching with these various online activities that maybe you wouldn't be reaching in other ways?
Yeah, with church online in particular, our goal is to try to connect with people that are outside the reach of a physical church or who would prefer to explore who God is in a virtual or a web context prior to stepping foot into a church building, maybe people that are intimidated by church or just don't know what to expect. And so that's kind of our goal, but also we're also trying to leverage some of the technology we have today to be able to intersect people at moments where they're really searching in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so an example of that is we actually run advertisements on Google. And you mentioned earlier in the program that one of the ads that someone clicked on was when they were searching for church. But in addition to the kind of the obvious things that people might be searching for church experience or an online church experience, we actually run ads on terms that relate to pornography or relate to people that are searching for some sort of sexual encounter online. Mm-hmm. Because we know that if we can actually intersect people at a time where they're searching to kind of fill a void in their life, and we can engage them not just with content, but actually with community, So that can be a powerful experience and a way to reach people that maybe the church isn't able to reach. And so that's actually something that we do. We have thousands of people that actually come via that. And we only run the ads when there's a live service happening. So it's the type of thing that we're really intentional about wanting to make sure that we can connect people to other people and particularly give them an opportunity to share or to pray with others or to talk or build kind of a one-on-one relationship. And so our goal is to reach people that aren't connected to the church, and we've seen great success in doing that. But additionally, it also becomes an opportunity for people that are a part of our church already to stay connected, people that maybe are more mobile or their job takes them to different cities on a regular basis. It becomes a way for them to stay engaged with the community. So we really have a relatively diverse group of people that come, but our goal and our passion behind it is to try to connect the people that maybe the church isn't able to reach right now.
I mentioned the story of William earlier on as we started our chat. Who else comes to mind as somebody who your church has actually been able to reach, who was searching spiritually and was able to connect with your church and find God?
You know, using the kind of the same illustration I just was about those search terms, at Easter time, we heard from a gentleman that was from Atlanta, Georgia, that said he was actually searching on YouTube for naked ladies at the time.
And he found you.
yeah, he actually found us instead. And because our ads are quite simple, they would say things like, searching for naked ladies, try church online instead. So it's a very straightforward ad. But what he said was really interesting. What he said was, I'd been so far from God that I really couldn't even hear his voice, but when I saw that ad, I knew that I couldn't go any further, and I just had to click on that ad and just went on to explain how that process, he knew that God had drew him to the church and that he was committing his life to Christ through that experience. It was just transformational in his life. And there's similar stories. I've got several I could tell you, and another for Second Life. There's a gentleman who had been very sick and through several kind of a mental illness that he had in his life, had lost his family and his wife, and he found himself at the age of 41 living in his parents' basement at their house and just not wanting to engage with society and with the public again because he had just been so hurt through the process. And so he actually saw an advertisement in Second Life for our church and came to the three-dimensional world or venue that we have there and again expressed how he was committing his life to Christ, how he was just praying that God would just help him to overcome some of the challenges that he had in his life and asking us to pray with him as well. Mm-hmm. And just kind of seeing the depression and things in his life, just really praying that God would take those things away and see his life restored. So it's just there's examples like that happen every week. There's folks that are from all different backgrounds, Muslim, people have no context for Christianity at all, that are engaging and connecting with our volunteers and our staff, and it's just incredible to see what God's doing through it.
I'd be interested to hear folks' ideas on this on 1-300-40-2020 and what might be the downsides and if they can be overcome when it comes to some sort of online community. So if you've got a view on that 1-300-40-2020, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is it's wonderful that you're connecting all of these people via their computers in their offices or, you know, via their mobile phones or whatever right around the world. But what about the tactical aspects of being a people in community? What about hugs? What about a literal shoulder to cry on? Eating meals together, looking people in the eye, visiting people when they're sick. Is there a goal to have people move from online to real life relationships at all?
You know, our approach is what we would sort of say is an all of the above approach, which basically means that we, you know, for some people, this is their only connection to a Christian community. They might live in a country where there simply aren't, you know, very many Christians or very many people that they can connect to talk about their faith or to explore it. For others, like those that might live in the U.S. or even Australia for that matter, they may be within driving distance of a great church or a place the community connect to. So we don't try to discourage that from happening at all. In fact, we really encourage it, and there's been several people that we've connected to local churches in their community and so they can build additional relationships with. But I think the tendency with any kind of new technology is that people sort of make these all or nothing analyses of the technology. It's sort of the assumption is, well, if you're developing community using these tools, isn't that wrong because you're not meeting with people, touching people, hugging people like you were mentioning? Mm. And the truth is that people don't replace all of those things with this technology. They simply usually use this in addition to those. And so these aren't, for the people that I know that engage the church online, it's not their only form of engagement or relationship. It's just one of the tools that they use.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to simply chatting using text, a lot of times our staff or our volunteers, they'll pick up the phone and talk with people, you know, that come to church online and engage in those conversations. We've had people fly from different states to participate in kind of work projects. We did one in the city of New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina
mm-hmm.
came through there, and we had people fly from Maine and from different states around the U.S. that were all part of Church Online, and they met physically to actually go and meet physical needs of others. So basically, to answer your question is we certainly don't discourage that from happening. In fact, oftentimes encourage it, but realize that there are some times where this kind of community is the only option for people or the preferred option for people. And so it's not always a linear path
yes.
from virtual to physical. But many times it is.
Yeah. And so, Bobby, what happens when, say, somebody who is part of the online church that you're running then becomes a follower of Jesus and then decides to be baptized? What happens then? Is there some sort of kind of church policy on that? How do you work with that?
That's a great question. And what you're identifying is where there's a lot of debate right now within folks that are using church online. There's a lot of things that we're figuring out, you know, as it goes.
Mm.
And in that particular case, what we've done is we've often encouraged people to get baptized at a church in their community.
Mm-hmm.
Or we've had several that have traveled to one of our campuses because we have, you know, have them throughout the United States. And they've traveled sometimes long distances to participate in one of our baptism experiences. But we definitely encourage people to get baptized and to be able to express that decision that they've made to others and in front of others. And
yeah.
So at this point, we haven't done anything in terms of a virtual baptism or something along those lines. if we have a policy, we really do encourage people to get baptized in water via immersion. And it's just
yes.
kind of the way that we do it.
Well, the fact is that, like you said, you know, you're still working these things out. It's a process, but you're on the process. I mean, you're reaching all of these people, and these are the natural questions that need to be asked and to be worked out as you go. And I think it's great that you have that kind of problem, that you've
yeah.
got to work out these kinds of things. I mean, the other thing would be communion, when people actually celebrate the Lord's Supper, as it's called. Do you anything in particular there?
You know, we've actually had communion online several times. And what we'll do, a variety of different things, we've actually mailed the elements to people, which are, you know, kind of the bread and wine, like mm-hmm. a cup of eggs, just sent that via the postal service to people in advance
huh.
so they could prepare. And then other times we've actually encouraged people to participate by using things that they had at their house. But the main thing is we did it sort of together as a community online. There's some people that may theologically, you know, have challenges with that one way or the other, but that is that's sort of the position that we've had with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that we have practiced as a community.
And Bobby, what to do about the virtual personality? We all know that the wonderful tool that the internet is also gives us this wonderful evil to be able to be whoever we want ourselves to be and kind of present ourselves online as anybody. I mean, how do you disciple the virtual personality when you don't know exactly if the person that is presented to you is actually the real person?
Yeah, I think that's a challenge that we navigate, just like any of us that are online try to decipher or discern, you know, if people are being genuine or honest with us. The thing about it is deception's obviously been a part of society for a long, long time. I mean, as far back as Adam and Eve, as far as I can remember, so that's not something that's new, you know, the ability for people to deceive or desire for people to deceive.
Mm.
What I've found, though, is that when it comes to people online, in real life, we don't have a physical facade, but oftentimes we have an emotional facade or an internal facade. And so because people can see our physical bodies, there's a lot of times we won't express what's really going on the inside, or we have very few people that we feel comfortable doing that with. And what I found is that because people are able to hide behind a physical facade with technology and with the web, there's actually more people that are willing to express what's really going on the inside. Because they have sort of the safety of a physical facade, they're more willing for you to be able to see who they really are.
Mm.
And so even though you may not always be able to know if this is John Smith, you know, who lives in this city for sure, many times the things, the issues, the things they're expressing that are going on inside of their lives are oftentimes more real than the conversations we would have in the physical world.
Bobby, so fascinating to talk to you. I really do appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, Bobby Gruenwald, who is a pastor at and the innovation leader of LifeChurch.tv in the United States. You say it's in the United States. They've got a physical campus in Oklahoma that's spread to now a variety of campuses right around the United States. But then they've got 40,000 to 50,000 odd people logging into their 24, 25 online services. 40,000 to 50,000 computers logging into those every week. It's amazing, isn't it? Absolutely fascinating.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.